This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Eek. When it comes to sexual health issues, who hasn't heard of Tongkat Ali or other herbal remedies being touted to solve bedroom problems? But what do we really know about the efficacy and safety of such traditional therapies? So today we are looking at whether traditional and complementary medicine has a role to play when it comes to two health issues in the bedroom, sexual disorders and sleep problems. And to discuss that with me today, I have Dr. Lim Renjia, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, as well as Chan Cien, a pharmacist. So thank you very much for joining me. How are the both of you today?
I'm fine. Hi.
Hi, I'm great.
So to start with, of course, we are Malaysians. You know, we grew up in this Asian culture. We are all familiar with some form of traditional medicine or other, you know, depending on our own ethnic and cultural background. Of course, we probably would have grown up using some form of it. But from a medical perspective, Dr. Lim, what exactly would you consider to be traditional medicine? And in fact, we use the term traditional and complementary medicine, right? And what is its role in our healthcare today?
I think I've seen all the wordings like traditional, complementary, alternative, and integrative. But do we understand what's the meaning of all these wordings? I think if a non-mainstream practice is used together with conventional medicine, it's considered complementary. But if a non-mainstream practice is used in place of conventional medicine, like in practice in the United States, it is actually considered alternative. You have the option. And you may also hear the terms functional medicine, whereby these terms always refers to a concept similar to integrative health. Integrative health often brings conventional and complementary approaches together in a coordinated way. It emphasizes a holistic, patient-focused approach to healthcare and wellness. It's often including mental, emotional, functional, spiritual, social, and community aspect, and treating the patients as a whole rather than, for example, in our conventional medicine, one organ system. And most of the time, it's actually aimed for well-coordinated care between different providers and institutions.
But in terms of the kinds of therapies used, when you're talking about functional medicine, are they completely different therapies to conventional medicine?
I think in traditional and complementary medicines, there are various branches under this, especially in Malaysia setting. For example, we have traditional Malay medicine. These are based on your ethnic groups, traditional Indian medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, and we do have others type of complementary medicine as well. And what's the main difference between the conventional medicines, or what we call a modern medicine, and the traditional and complementary medicine is the approach and the philosophy that holds. I give a very simple example. When I look at a fever itself presenting to me, as a medical doctor, we would like to rule out whether there's any problems or single root cause that cause a fever. For example, bacterial infections, viral infections, or may it be some cancer or others possible underlying one root cause that caused the fever. But for the Chinese medicine, for example, when they see a fever, they will consider other problems, whether the patient's immune system or the inner constitutions having some problems that might lead the patients to prone to develop such a fever. And at the same time, because of some virulence factors come into it, and causing the fever. So the main difference is the approach and the philosophy that holds between both worlds.
You know, when you look at that philosophy of traditional medicine of looking at a different viewpoint, right, then what are your thoughts? Should traditional medicine be used as an alternative, or should it be used in a complementary form?
I think in the Ministry of Health of Malaysia, actually, they have positions of traditional and complementary medicine as a complementary role. So they have defined it in such a way. But that's mostly applied in the government setting. But what we need to aware that in the real life, there are actually patients or the publics who adopt the traditional and complementary medicine as an alternative for their disease or some symptoms. So, but as a national policy-wise, we are moving towards complementary. But in the real life, there are patients still using this, and this especially apply in the rural settings, even in the urbanized area. According to a study done, I think it's about four or five years ago, there's about 40% of the local community has been using TNCM or traditional and complementary medicine at least once in past year, in one year time. So you can see how popular of this TNCM. And I think government recognized the importance and the role of TNCM. That's why they start to regulate and come up with a lot of standards, SOP and guidelines to standardize the industry and foster the growth for the industry as well.
Cian, as a pharmacist, how do you view traditional and complementary medicine?
I think there's some obstacles in the traditional complementary medicine because of there are defects and myths between the traditional medicine or what the public think that natural medicine. They think that when it comes to natural, then it is safe. That's the issues that we need to address. This is also why that I went to study the master in herbal medicine, and emphasizing the quality and safety of the herbs doesn't mean that natural is safe. Sometimes if it's overdosage or if it's adulterations, that might be causing the problems and also the effectiveness of both world. So there's some issues like herb drug or drug or herbs interactions that the public needs to be aware of as well when they choose whether they want to go for the Western or the traditional as a complementary or even alternative or even supplements as well. So they need to be aware what to go for, when to go for which medicine.
So am I right in saying, Cian, that your role as a pharmacist in TCM is very similar to the role of a pharmacist in mainstream medicine? It is to still look at quality, safety and efficacy of the treatments, right?
Mainly. So when there is a new patient, I usually do a thorough medication history, like all the pharmacists will do in the community setting or even in the hospital. What they probably won't touch too much on is the traditional medicine or even some of the herbs that they boil at home and so on. I mainly touch on that part mostly and then to look into whether there's any herb drugs interaction.
All right. So, as you said, a lot of the arguments that people make when they use traditional medicine is, oh, it's natural, so it's safer. Or even it's been used for generations by our ancestors, so it must be effective, it must be good for us, you know. Dr. Lim, is that kind of thinking in line with the idea of evidence-based medicine?
When we touch on these portions, actually, I would like to clarify that there are differences between the local folk herbs and the so-called traditional medicine, herbal medicine. Okay, what's the main difference between these two groups of herbs is for the Chinese medicines, whereby it has been inherited by generation, first thing, and there's so many generations have tried on this, and then till lately, whereby the China government or Hong Kong or Taiwan, they have done the extensive research on all these herbs to ensure about their active ingredients, their safety, and the dosage including, and their efficacy in order to achieve certain things. Okay, these are so-called Chinese herbal medicine. Okay, it has been studied extensively. But again, another part which local higher educations or the research institution which need to pay more efforts will be on the folk herbs, whereby local aborigines or asli or some of the traditional medicine practitioners, according to their experience, they have used certain herbs to treat certain type of symptoms. So they found out, oh, that's something effective. So they've been using it. Then again, you know about our Malaysian public's attitude. So they listen to these rumors and listen to that so-called Google's, whatever, information for FB. So they believe in it and start using it. But what's the lagging part will be on the safety prospect. And what's so more, whereby effectiveness of the herbal medications, whether it's really applied to your symptoms or your body, there's no one really know. So we are lacking of this type of evidence-based data for this type of local folk herbs.
Can you give some examples of these local folk herbs?
Have you heard of Sabah snake grass?
Yes, of course, yeah.
I think because my specialty is in oncology, it's cancer. So I found out plenty of my patients, almost I'd say 80 to 90 of my patient, 90% of my patients, actually somehow they have used this type of local folk herbs before. Okay. And then, yes, there are some studies being done trying to identify the active ingredients. But again, if you really look into the study, actually the safety profile is still lacking. So we don't really feel convinced and asking our patients to continue to consume this. So we advise them, better you stop it, especially when we're concerned about drug-herb interaction, when the patient is receiving chemo, radio, and other type of medication.
I see. What do you think is stopping us from doing more local research, Cian? You know, what can we do to close that gap when it comes to research on the local kinds of herbs?
I think that the researchers in Malaysia actually are trying their best to do the local herbs medicinal plants. Just that because the active ingredient actually varies when I did my studies on the Sabah snake grass, it's actually I took it from different places like from Penang and then KL, and then I even took one of these species in Taiwan. The ingredient itself is actually varies. So when it comes to this, we might need to think of whether this can be taken, because everybody will be taking a different plant at home, and the active ingredient is different as well. And in traditional complementary medicine, it actually emphasizes on it's not one size fit all. So for the Sabah snake grass, some people might take 5 leaves, or the other might need to take 10 or 15, and so on. So it's better for us to actually collaborate with the researchers in the unis or even in the lab to do a further step before we can say that it's actually safe or even effective for the patients. Then only we can go on for the further steps as well.
Yep. It's a very complex process, isn't it? Research for traditional,
very.
Yes, and complementary medicine. But you know, we are here to talk about two more specific areas of medicine today, or two specific kinds of health concerns. One is sleep disorders, and the other one is sexual disorders. So let's go for a quick break, and when we come back, we will go into the bedroom, and we will talk about sleep problems and the role of traditional and complementary medicine. Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Lim Renjai, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, as well as Chan Cian, pharmacist. So stay tuned on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiaoyik. On the line with me, Dr. Lim Renjai, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, as well as Chan Cian, pharmacist. And we are looking at traditional and complementary medicine in the context of some bedroom issues. Two main areas, really, sexual disorders, as well as sleep problems. So before the break, we talked generally about the role of traditional and complementary medicine, especially in Malaysian society, where I think it is well accepted in a sense, but there are also a lot of challenges with regard to ensuring that consumers are taking safe and effective forms of traditional and complementary medicine, how is it being used together with mainstream medicine, which is evidence-based? So that's a big conversation, but I think let's zoom into the sleep issues first. And these can be really wide-ranging. You know, sleep problems differ from person to person, and they have a lot of different factors that influence them. CN, perhaps you could just walk us through very generally, what are the common types of sleep problems that people usually suffer from, and what causes these?
When it comes to sleep problems, many of us think that it's only the insomnia which are the main issues that causes. But actually, in the Western world, they actually classified them in the International Classification of Sleep Disorders. So it divided into six parts. The first one is insomnia, then sleep-related breathing disorder. The next one will be condition when they have significant episodes of sleepiness. Then another one is the rhythm of sleep-wake disorder. Then sleep-related movement disorders and parasomnias. So most of the people in Malaysia have the insomnia, I would say, which is the main issues.
Okay, so then maybe we focus more on insomnia if that's the main one. What causes insomnia? Dr. Lim, perhaps you could weigh in on that.
For insomnia, most of the times it could be because of physicals or the psychological parts that plays a very important role. And for examples, when we talk about physical parts, where the patient's having some medical conditions, for example, having some chronic diseases or some heart problems, and this might actually lead to patients having the insomnia. But at the same time, when the patient facing some problems like stress, especially during this economy's recessions, critical times, whereby everyone is facing difficult times to get job, and then are worried about their income, and this could contribute to the stress and leading to the insomnia as well.
All right. Can I quickly touch on the breathing-related issues that cause sleep problems? Just very briefly, what would be some of the breathing issues that you would see leading to sleep problems, Dr. Lim?
First of all, what's commonly encountered by our community now is actually obstructive sleep apnea. It's something which has been continuously been raised up, especially for the patients with obese type of problems. And then this type of conditions is usually happening when the partner next to you, they heard about some special characteristic of your sleeping. A very good example will be something like this. When your partner here, you snore, keep on snoring, suddenly no more noise, okay? And then you just suddenly like wake up from your sleep, and then you continue to sleep back. So this is some of the classical symptoms the partner next to you, who sleep next to you, can describe. So obstructive sleep apnea is one of it. And then there are some conditions whereby patients having reflux, like what I mentioned, some of the physical causes, gastric. In Chinese medicine, we mentioned about if someone having a gastric problem, he can never have a good sleep. So same thing happens here. So when the patient's having so-called GRD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or some other gastric problems, and this might actually disturb the patient's sleep as well.
All right. So Dr. Lim, how does the traditional medicine philosophy look at sleep? Because I think we know, yes, sleep is important for health, but it's also one thing that we quite readily sacrifice because we are meeting deadlines. We would rather do other things, put sleep, you know, at the very last, even when we compare to diet and exercise, for instance. So what can we learn from traditional medicine when it comes to the importance of sleep?
Okay, when we talk about sleeping in TCM, the heart is the organs that actually control our mind or brain activity. And what we found out, the best timing for the patients to rest is around 10 o'clock. That's the first thing. most of the audience have to bear in mind. And then the next thing is the heart, how to actually calm your heart down is actually reducing the stimulation you are receiving through your eyes. Okay, for example, nowadays, though you are saying that because of meeting of deadlines, you have to sacrifice your sleep. But at the same time, we have many people who continue to stay at the screen, at their handphone, at their laptop, at their tablets, before they actually go to sleep. So continuously with all these electronics stimulations actually increase your brain activity and making your heart, your mindset being overactive. And this actually lead to disturbance in your sleeping. So you can see, though you feel that Chinese medicine is not related to this, but in the other way, when we talk about this, the heart is actually the one controlling your mindset and receiving continuously, causing you to continuously working on your brain. At last, what will happen is you have bad sleep. So first thing, you have to make sure there's no electrical stimulation before sleep. The second thing is make sure you go to the bed on time. And the last thing in the Chinese medicine is the most important of all, and I always kidding with my patient, is to treat your insomnia, the best way is I throw you to the kampong. Why? Because when I throw you to the kampong, you have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you go to the rubber estate and keep on taping. And then because of this physical activity, actually you strain your body, you feel tired, right? By the time reaching at the nighttime, there's no nightlife, no bar, no lunch. And then the only thing is facing your partner. And then, okay, definitely you feel bored. Okay, then what will you do? Sleep. Yeah, I think that's one of the most commonly encountered problems with our organized lifestyle is because there are too many activities. And that's, we only use our brain most of the time. But physical-wise, you are actually hardly use it. So your brain's overactive, but your body never use it. So what will happen is you can't sleep. So you want to treat it a natural way, throw them to the kampong.
Okay. So apart from that, because that's not going to work for everyone, Dr. Lim. Sien, if we look at treating insomnia, for instance, what is treatment aimed at and what are the kinds of treatment options that can be used, whether it's mainstream or from the TCM perspective?
My perspective is when we come to insomnia, other than the medical issue, we need to think of the medication. Some medications that might cause the insomnia, for example, some of the high blood pressure medication like beta blockers, and then steroids, diuretics, some medication that contains caffeine, like one of the paracetamol that is for the migraine that contains caffeine as well, that causes all these. Then we come to the evidence-based, like what we talk about for the traditional Chinese medicine. So there is a study, evidence study, that actually categorized on the patterns of the insomnia in Chinese medicine diagnosis, other than the heart issues or the what Dr. Ling has mentioned. There's actually the imbalance of the yin and yang. For example, there's a deficiency of the yin or yang in the heart and spleen, or even the liver qi. When we talk about Chinese medicine, there's a liver qi stagnation or liver fire flaming that causes all these. So once we're able to categorize them into all these patterns, then it comes into the treatment-wise. Because when we have the Chinese medicine pattern diagnosis, that we use what type of the herbs or even the acupuncture points that help out with that patterns. So we need to diagnose first before we give the treatment, unlike the old folks herbs that it's one size fits all. When there is an insomnia, then you use what medications.
I think the special things about the TCM is a personalized and tailored treatment. Based on what Sien has mentioned just now, when your body is lacking of the yin, yin is a component in your body that make you feel nourish your body and calm your mind down. It's lacking. So what the TCM's physicians or practitioners that will do is that give you something that will replenish the yin. So what you are lacking, we replenish it. And whatever is excessive, we remove it. And this applies throughout the treatment sessions for the TCM, including the points that we select, acute points that we select. Also, there's a manipulation way or maneuver that actually we release or replenish by doing a certain type of manipulation method. So this concept is actually holds throughout the treatment session.
If yin is to nourish the body and calm the mind, what is the yang?
Yang is something that makes you always alert, energetic. And then yin and yang is a concept whereby they are opposite to each other. For example, the sun is the yang and the moon is the yin. Okay? And then the sky is the yang and the earth is the yin. So it's a relative relationship between two components. For gentlemen, it's yang. For ladies, it's yin. So the characters that they hold, that they carry along with them, actually describing whether this is yin or yang. And all the problems in your body is actually because of the imbalance of this yin and yang. So when the TCM physician is taking your pulse, looking into your tongue for the tongue inspection, asking you for the medical history, and doing some physical examination, they will come up to something what we call syndrome differentiation. And this syndrome differentiation is the summary, I will call it executive summary of your body constitution, telling us what is lacking in your body. And based on this executive summary, the doctors or the TCM physicians will do accordingly, remove the excesses and replenish whatever deficient.
Help me to understand what exactly would be lacking. What exactly is it that you're replenishing?
Because this yin and yang is a concept there. But if we want to apply our modern scientific background or the evidence into it, you will find, for example, those foods or the medication with the replenishing yin properties will be like goji berry. And then you will find that more and more evidence is actually showing that goji berry do have some sedative effects that calm your mind, okay? So with this goji berry, which replenish the yin, is when we found out your tongue, there's a cracked line, is actually because of constitution inside there, deficient in yin, it will appear with some signs or symptoms. For example, you have hot flushes, you have a poor sleeping, you have end up with sleeping disorders, and then your skin gets dry. So these are all the signs that we can collect. And you can call it, because the causes for yin deficiency, there's so plenty, I cannot give you all the causes. But the physicians will use something to replenish it. For example, the goji berry I mentioned just now. And later we found out, through the evidence or the research way, we found out, oh, there are some vitamins or some minerals actually being lacking when the patient's having this disorder. So when we give something to replenish it, actually fit into the current modern medicine sense. But again, whether this goji berry replenishing yin equals to the modern medicine's something that can sedative or working like a sleeping pill, not totally the same. But there are certain components actually fit into the modern medicine sense. But if you ask me, the Chinese medicines, actually they are more comprehensive, it's more broader.
You know, if we are talking about looking at the yin and yang, or maybe you want to look at liver qi stagnation, as you said, you know, whatever the diagnosis is, and then you provide the appropriate treatment, how effective is it? Is it going to cure insomnia?
When we talk about the efficacy or effectiveness of any interventions, the best way or what we call a more commonly acceptable way we'll be doing a research, okay? So there are actually more and more evidence based on the TCM, like what I mentioned just now, the syndrome differentiations diagnosis, and then they come up with different regime. For example, I have a qi stagnation just now. So I have a formula for the qi stagnation. I have a heart heatiness, as mentioned by CN just now. So I have a formula for the heart heatiness. So by using this method, And then there are more and more researchers actually venturing into this and study about the effect of the formula. And you will see there are actually more and more papers from Taiwan, Korean, Japan, and then China itself, even Australia or UK or United States. They're actually studying a lot and extensively on the TCM, especially on this different formula. Because what they found out is, as compared to last time, whereby we treat the sleeping disorder, we just, most of the time, we are giving some sleeping pills and very single directions acting, okay? But now, there are more people actually aware that, or maybe the way that we treat the sleeping disorder, you might need to have a different approach rather than just focus on one. And the formulas what the TCM physicians have been doing is actually fit into the idea of multi-target mechanism rather than a single target going in.
All right. So coming up, we'll talk about another major issue in the bedroom, that's erectile dysfunction, and what's the role of TCM in treating this sexual health issue. Is it all these herbs and supplements that you always hear about from your relatives or on social media? So we'll find out from Dr. Lim Renjai, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, and Chan Cien, pharmacist, when we come back. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. On the line with me is Dr. Lim Renjai, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, and Chan Cien, pharmacist. We're looking at whether TCM, or that's traditional and complementary medicine, whether it belongs in the bedroom. So previously we talked about one area of health concerns in the bedroom, and that's sleep disorders. And now we're moving on to sexual health disorders, namely erectile dysfunction. And that's one area that traditional medicine is constantly cited in. We hear so much about herbs and traditional remedies being touted to treat ED. But first, Cien, maybe you can just do a very quick refresher for us. What exactly is erectile dysfunction and what causes it?
Erectile dysfunction is actually the inability to get and keep an erection firm enough for sex. There are a few problems like trouble of getting an erection, or trouble keeping an erection, or even the reduce of the sexual desire.
So when we look at, you know, treating erectile dysfunction from a conventional medicine perspective, what are treatment options? What are the objectives for treatment?
There are some oral medications that use for this erectile dysfunction, where most of the people know, which is the blue pill, like the sildenafil, vadenafil, and recently there are newer nafil drugs that comes to in mind. But actually, not everyone is suitable for these oral medications when it comes to the this problem. But some of the public might choose to go to the pharmacy and get it. But this actually needs a prescription. Because sometimes if you are taking some of the drugs like the nitrates drugs, like the heart issues medications, or even some having some low blood pressure issues, uncontrolled high blood pressures, or even have some liver disease and kidney disease, the person actually not it's not safe for them to take this medication. So we need to screen through, and then the doctors need to do a thorough medical conditions first before this can be taken, because there are some side effects for this oral medication as well.
And so Dr. Lim, then coming to traditional and complementary medicine, you know, how does this branch of medicine view erectile dysfunction, and what does it offer for treating ED?
Again, in Chinese medicine, we talk about sleep disorder just now. The heart is the one controlling your brain activities. For the reproductive system, actually, there are two organs actually involved in this. The first of all will be on the kidney. The other one will be on the liver. And in our modern medicine sense, kidney itself is actually mainly for excretions of urine. Okay, but in the Chinese medicine, besides excretion of urine, it also involves in reproductive system. And this includes the sexual performance. And that's applied for both gentlemen and ladies. And for the liver, is actually in the Chinese medicine sense, is store and essence. So when your body doesn't have enough blood or essence, so it cannot drive your body to perform accordingly or properly. And that's especially applied when you're having problems with menstruations and including ED, erectile dysfunction. So in essence, these are the two main organs that involve in regulating this. So any problems or imbalance with the kidney or the liver, and this might lead actually eventually to the erectile dysfunction.
Why is it so different to the mainstream medicine view of ED? In mainstream medicine, ED is viewed as a vascular disease, right? And it's treated in that context. How is it so different?
I think in the first part of the interview, we mentioned how the conventional medicine look at disease is mainly a one organ or one root cause. We call it a reductionist approach. Everything's back to one single root cause, and you treat the root cause, then it cure. That's how the modern medicine practitioners been trained. Okay, but in the Chinese medicine, they look at the people as a small universe. So erectile dysfunction is not only the problem with your penis. Okay, it's actually involving the patient's inner constitutions as well. And this is very applied, and especially true when you found out most of the patients with vascular disorder, for example, diabetes patients or heart failures, or they have some form of heart attack before, or stroke patients, whereby the vessels themselves is somehow clotted, okay, it's getting narrower, and most of the time they suffer from an ED as well. Okay, this applies in our modern medicine sense. But when you look into the Chinese medicine, they see this a long time ago, and they found this. And they treat it, not only focus on the erectile dysfunction, but they treat the patient as a whole. So this is a main difference between conventional, whereby the medication I'm giving to you to treat is actually focused on the vascular, then the erectile dysfunction. So all these blue pills, whatever not pills has been given to the patient, trying to boost all the blood to the penis in order to make it erect. But in Chinese medicines, how we approach will be on, I need to correct your inner environment first. I need to remove whatever clots, whatever pathogenic factors inside your bodies before actually I boost you up. So you can see the difference. We see the patient as a whole, and the erectile dysfunction is actually a consequence of the inner body imbalance. And Western medicine, okay, we focus on the sexual organ.
So with TCM, are we talking about the use of herbs?
Okay, when we talk about TCM, the treatment approach is not only restricted to the herbal medicine. It involves acupuncture and moxibustion as well. So based on the patient's condition, for example, just now we talk about kidney and the liver. When the kidney yang is deficient, there are certain points on acute points on the body whereby we can do some things trying to replenish the kidney yang. So we can do the moxibustion at certain part of the acute points, and then it's able to stimulate it. And so these are some of the approach we have beside the herbal treatment. Of course, there are more and more because when we talk about erectile dysfunction and the medication itself is a billion, multi-billion business. Plenty of pharmaceutical companies is actually looking into the TCM, the herbs, and trying to discover any new or novel agents which are able to treat the ED. So what they have found is, yes, a lot of the medication which has been used to replenish the kidney yang, they do play some roles in order to boost or what we call to treat the erectile dysfunction using a different mechanism. But again, their effects is not as strong as the sildenafil, the blue pill. Now, what I've been telling is the one that replenishing kidney yang is only part of the treatment. It's not all. Okay, so usually when we prescribe the herbs to the patients, the ones replenishing kidney yang, I will top up with something to clear the inner environment. So make sure the blood circulation is getting better. So the treatment will be very holistic and comprehensive. So we have herbal treatment, we have moxibustion, we have acupuncture that's trying to help our patient with the erectile dysfunction.
And is this on top of the pharmaceutical treatment, like the sildenafils and all of that?
I think you talk about something what CM will be more familiar with. It's on the drug-herb interaction.
For all the sildenafils and so on, actually some of the patients actually don't take it on a regular basis. So for us, we would recommend patients to start on the herbs first. Then if they need, then they might need to, we might need to refer them to the Western approach. And then if really the herbs and drugs needs to be complemented together, then we will advise at least 2 hours apart. This is the minimum. A part of that, I also need to know that any other medications that may interact with the herbs and also the drugs that they are currently taking as well.
So, you know, speaking of herbs, especially for erectile dysfunction, what I really want to know is, does Tongkat Ali work, Sian?
There are some studies on that as well, but actually for natural herbs like Tongkat Ali itself, for one Tongkat Ali, actually there are many bioactive ingredients in there. Actually, there are some of the bioactive ingredients which has already identified pharmacologically and in chemistry, just that we might need more time to actually isolate them and purify them in terms of the active ingredient itself. To actually do more research on that. That would be towards the drug discovery type on the Tongkat Ali itself.
Currently, we don't use Tongkat Ali lah.
In our setting for traditional Chinese medicine, because Tongkat Ali is not in the Chinese herbs pharmacology book, so it's still claimed as the old folks herbs rather than the Chinese medicine herbs.
But Dr. Lim, when it comes to sexual disorders, I think especially a lot of traditional medicine is being sold through WhatsApp. You know, it's the kind of stuff you see being advertised on banners at the traffic light and promoted by celebrities, right? So how do we distinguish those from the pharmacologically studied and the evidence-based kind of TCM that, you know, you're talking about today?
Yes, you are absolutely right. There are so many channels to access to so-called supplements or traditional products that helps in sexual disorder. And I think we need to back to the square whereby whenever we receive any information of any form of products, you need to check whether this product itself is actually registered with the Ministry of Health, especially the NPR, National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, which ensure the safety and the quality of the products. And this is very important to make sure that the most of the concern we have with all these so-called products that are able to treat sexual disorder will be whether there's any adulteration, whereby they add in and then the patients or the consumer there do not aware of such a potential risk, and then on top of that, they're still taking some blue pills or whatever things and causing overdosage, which could be very dangerous and sometimes may cause death for the patient as well. These are the complications that we don't want the most. So you have to check on whether this medication or products is actually registered. And another thing that I would like to share also will be on when you're looking for a traditional medicine or traditional Chinese medicine practitioners, again, you have to verify about their registration status. Now, Ministry of Health is in the process of registering all these TCM practitioners and go to those recognized and reputable institutions or centers whereby the practitioner is more credible and trustworthy, and you know whatever they are doing is actually on the right path, and that you know both worlds properly, at least with someone to safeguard the safety concern whereby most of the patients have. Because one day you just don't know, your patients just bring one another plant rather than Tongkat Ali. I have a patient who brought me a tiger penis, so-called. So you can see, so there are plenty of all these things are actually available in the market. So we really need to back to the square and check and then ask and question.
All right. So tiger penis out. So is it, can we ask for a license number? You know, is it like how the mainstream doctors are regulated? And, you know, is there a council that I can check with or report to if I feel that, you know, I'm not seeing somebody who's credible?
I think from the website itself, you can actually check on it. They have something we call a quest tree.
That one is for products. If for registration products, then you can check from the National Pharmaceutical Bureau in Ministry of Health, then whether there is a recognized MAL number, which is the registration number for products. For the registration practitioners, Dr. Lim, maybe you can talk more.
So about for registered practitioners, it's actually fall under the purview of a traditional and complementary medicines division. So meantime, they are actually doing the volunteer registration. And then in very soon time, they are going to make it mandatory for all the TCM practitioners to register themselves. So once they register themselves, it will be something like our Malaysia Medical Council, whereby all the Western medical practitioners, they have to register them to this council. And this applies to the TCM practitioners in future, very soon. So you can just go to the TNCMC, the council, and check whether Dr. Lim Ren Jai's name appears there. So if my names appear there, it's most likely I'm already registered with my qualifications, proper qualifications, and where do I practice will be available online.
All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time. But can I get a final message from each of you for what we've been talking about today, especially TCM in relation to sleep and sexual health disorders? Cian, perhaps a message from you first?
From my side, other than we need to really look into what are the facts and evidence, and then other than the effectiveness, actually safety and quality of the herbs that you are taking actually are very important. So if you are taking some of the unregistered products online, probably there's some issues or the adulteration with the Western medicine and so on. So do find a registered practitioners or even Western doctors to help you out if you have any issues, either the sleep disorder or the heart issue or even any medical condition.
Dr. Lim?
Always refer to a credible or reputable centers for a proper type of treatment. So do not simply believe in variables being spreading around online, but refer back to something tangible and back to the center.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Lim Ren Jai, traditional and complementary medicine consultant, as well as Chan Cian, a pharmacist. We've been discussing traditional and complementary medicine in treating sexual disorders and sleep problems. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.